You're listening to Voices from the 2008 ACLU Membership Conference. I'm Matt Dellinger. Adora Udoji is with us. She's the co-host with John Hockenberry of The Takeaway, a new public radio program that just launched this spring. And previously, she was a host on Court TV and a correspondent with ABC News and CNN. She covered some of the most critical domestic and international stories of the past 15 years, including three presidential elections, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, the O.J. Simpson criminal trial, and Hurricane Katrina. And thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, we've just seen a historic campaign for the Democratic primary race between a woman and an African-American man. Are racism and sexism on the run in this country?
On the run, I think that's probably a very strong word, but it has been an extraordinary campaign. I don't think there's a single person, whether you're talking about a sophisticated political strategist or you're talking about a voter in middle America, who even 2 years ago could have foreseen the kind of discussion that this 2008 presidential election has already sparked. Have we made strides? Sure. Is there still bias and discrimination and racism and sexism? Absolutely. But does it change the nature of the discussion when you look at the accomplishments of members of the African-American community or members of the woman community?
Do you get the sense that it surprised a lot of people in those communities?
I don't know if anybody was surprised, because particularly when you take a look at Hillary Clinton, for example. She's someone who's been on the national consciousness for more than 16 years, right, as first lady, as senator. And Barack Obama has certainly, he was injected into our national discussion of politics, you know, in the last, really, like in the last 6 or 7 years. So I don't know if anyone was surprised per se, but the way that it unfolded, I think there was an enormous amount of unpredictability.
Right.
I think a year ago when he started his campaign, Barack Obama started his campaign, many people didn't take him seriously.
Right.
There was not this fundamental acknowledgement that the kind of money-making machine, for example, that he was setting up was really going to help catapult him in ways that I don't think most people would have predicted. And I think that's really going to be one of the big stories in looking back, is just the nature of his organization, both politically, the on the ground, the way that they got people to caucuses and to the polls, and the extraordinary amount of money that they have raised.
Right. Now, you are a member of the African-American community and the woman community.
I am,
as
both.
You say. Yes. Did this mean anything to you personally?
I mean, I think it's just really exciting. I mean, it's a very exciting time. And I should add that my profile is very similar to Barack Obama's, which is I have an African parent and I have a white parent. And so, you know, go biracial kids. But, you know, as a member of the African-American community, it's very exciting when you hear all these stories and you see people's children just looking up at this man and saying, I can do that too sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they're not going to want to, but the idea that that option is open to you in a way is just more powerful than I think I could actually put into words, is that
right.
Imagery.
Yeah.
Same thing for young girls,
yeah,
looking at Hillary Clinton and just seeing her tenaciousness and her absolute determination and the way that she campaigned for more than a year straight every single day, whether mm-hmm. she had a voice or not. So I think those images are really powerful for young people.
Now, speaking of powerful images, you covered both the O.J. trial and Katrina, which for our country were moments of extreme racial contrast. And how do you, as a journalist and as a human being, I guess, how do you make sense of these moments? They're very different than what people want to understand about America.
That's a really interesting question, because they're so radically different
yeah.
scenarios. And with OJ, you had the cross-section of race and fame,
mm-hmm.
and he was a very rich, very well-known man, and how that played out in the judicial process. So you had that intersection of all of those things, in addition to the criminal justice system and a salacious and a horrible murder where two people were dead. And people had this relationship with him for this long period of time.
Right.
So there was all of these perceptions that wrapped themselves into what was...
Well, the fact that race was only one of many factors kind of makes it all the more interesting. And the same with Katrina. I mean, I don't know. It didn't jive with a lot of people's maybe what they wanted to think about.
Yeah, your point is exactly well taken, which is in the OJ, it wasn't just about race, right? It wasn't just about like Amadou Diallo in New York City where he got shot 41 times by undercover police officers, and it was just a cry of absolute racism. That's how many people saw it and felt it. OJ, there was this compilation of all these factors. Katrina was something else entirely. I think personally and professionally, that was the most painful story that I have ever covered in my entire life. To be standing in the middle of New Orleans 24 hours after the storm came through and the levees broke, and to see thousands and thousands and thousands of people who did not look how they lived. That was not how they lived their lives. Right. Many of them were working poor. Many of them were middle class people. And to know that there were Walmarts 45 minutes away in Baton Rouge that are entire city blocks big, that had food and water, and somehow we couldn't get that to our American citizens, our taxpayers, was just surreal. And to see the amount of suffering day after day was just extraordinary. I've spent a lot of time in the Middle East and in Africa and a lot of other places where you have very desperate circumstances. But the expectation of being able to minister to those things is very different just because of the very nature of what's available. Mm-hmm. This is the United States of America. New Orleans is a major city, right, which is close to other major cities. And the lack of seriousness with which not only the state government, but the federal government reacted was just astounding.
Now, having seen as much as you have and covered as much as you have, tell me about the moment we're in now. It seems particularly momentous, and how a journalist rises to this occasion. You have a brand new radio show. What are your goals as far as sort of, well, do you agree that this is a momentous time?
No, I think you pegged it. I think you're a smart man. It is on so many different levels, and there are real challenges for journalists. In part, they are technology-driven. In part, the nature of the business itself has changed really radically. Mm-hmm. And in part, the way that people consume news and what they're expecting from your news is very different. How do you meet that challenge? I think you have to be as relevant as you can, which is that you have to be really aware that, yes, we have a radio show that's on 2 hours a day, but people consume news on a 24-hour cycle, which is why it's really important for us that we have a very ambitious vision for our website that we hope to evolve to the point where it is this one-stop shopping, where there are the images, there is the sound, and there is the information that you need really to be informed about what's happening not only here in the United States, but all over the world.
You're participating in a panel today called Looking Ahead, Political Realities of a Post-Bush America. What advice or pleas do you have for whoever the next president is going to be?
Well, I think it's going to be so interesting because there's always a lot of push and pull with every presidency in the press. But there are certainly many people who make the argument and who fervently believe that the Bush administration has taken the level of secrecy and combativeness to the press to a whole new standard by trying to expand executive powers, by moving forward with terrorist prosecutions of terrorist suspects and what that's meant in terms of due process and so on and so forth. I think we have some tough questions, surveillance, domestic surveillance, how that happens and where the power comes to allow these agencies to spy on American citizens. There are big, big, big questions. And in part, whoever the next president is going to be is really going to have some decisions to make in terms of where the priorities are and where due process fits into the needs of being secure or maintaining the, security as an important benchmark of their presidency. And I think the list is really long, and there's three potential Supreme Court justices who could retire in the next 4 to 8 years. And that's, we know, is very significant. Mm-hmm. Look at what President Bush has done the last 7 or 8 years.
Right.
He's put very distinctive kind of thinkers on the bench. So depending on where you are on the continuum, there are serious questions ahead, and there's going to be no doubt lots of political wrangling over all of it.
Okay, well, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Adora. You've been listening to Voices from the 2008 ACLU Membership Conference. You can hear more of these conversations at the website aclu.org, and you can subscribe to the podcast feed through the iTunes Music Store. Just search for ACLU. This is Matt Dellinger.